So, how are things?
Things are fine. Things are busy. I got back to the United States and immediately started working, and it's just been stuff. Lots of stuff. Tons of stuff.
All the
I was gonna
stuff.
say all the great stuff, but it's really not that great. But yes, all the stuff.
Yeah, so you get off the runway and you just go straight back to work.
Almost. I mean, I got off the we landed at 9 p.m. LA time after getting up 5 a.m. in Paris, and going to the airport there, and then the connection and 4 hour layover in Chicago. So I should actually do the time zone math on what that winds up being. But I think I basically was traveling for probably close to 20 hours or 18 hours or something, like ridiculous.
Wow.
It was absurd. And then went to sleep at 9, and then for some reason woke up at 5 a.m. Because that would be sort of sleeping in late Paris time or something. So that was annoying.
Jet lag is always brutal.
But did you have any jet lag from your trip to Canada's California?
No, so I went out to Whistler and coming back was pretty fine. It's only 3 hours.
And for any listeners who don't know, Whistler is next to Vancouver, in British Columbia, way over on the side, but like up,
Yeah, on the West
on
Coast.
the West Coast is the best coast. But
No.
hey, you had a good time. You enjoyed everything about your
I did,
experience.
and the mountains were beautiful.
Don't you have mountains or anything over in Ontario?
No, we have trees. Like it's just forests and lakes, which is nice. It's just here in the fall, like everything looks like it's on fire, whereas in your coast, everything actually is on fire. So.
Oh, well, most of the fires are under control. Although there was one that I saw this morning when I went to go get little pastry items and coffee, and was driving back, and some commercial building, three-story commercial building, was on fire, and they had 100 firefighters on scene. So that was unusual for a Saturday morning.
Yeah, that's I was thinking more of the wildfires. There was that one that just like ripped through.
Oh, the ones up in the like what was it, Spokane or whatever, up there in Washington and Oregon, those ones were going on for quite some time. I think it was like a week and a half, 2 weeks or something. Because I remember Jason Snell and company talking about the smoky skies when they went to the Hugo Awards in, I can't remember if it was Tacoma or Spokane or where, but they were in Washington somewhere, and apparently the sky looked like orange ashy hellfire. So that was nice for them.
It sounds lovely.
Here it's just hot. It's a high of 88 today, and it's going to be 83 tonight for the low. So
Ooh.
that's some warm weather.
Here in 1 week, it went from being 35 Celsius, which is about the hottest it gets here, and insanely humid, to the following weekend, it was a low of 2, which is just above freezing.
Yeah, I'm still not 100% used to Celsius, although we did have a lot of English speaking European news stations on, because they have those, and everything would be in Celsius, and they'd be telling you the Celsius temperatures all over the globe. It was this very soothing music that they'd play for it too. But I'm still not 100% sold on it, especially when we were in the Peugeot rental car. The temperature in there is Celsius, and you had to adjust it on the little thing. And so you're actually adjusting in like half a degree increments. And so I was just like, this is a little silly.
Yeah, I always loved Celsius until I heard Gruber's explanation where he talks about how it's in relation to comfort levels. So with Fahrenheit, it's 0 is very cold and 100 is very hot. And in Celsius, 0 is winter and 100 is your dad.
Yeah, it's well, so that's why when you get into the temperature stuff that's in the like 20s range, and it's just like a degree or two, and you're just like, wow, this feels so different. But yeah. Everyone's so used to it that, you know, because you grow up learning that system, and so you can memorize what that experience feels like for you, and know what those that tiny little degree shift will have an effect.
So what were the other cultural differences over on that side of the pond?
Oh, mostly, as I discussed with Dan Sturm on Defocused, the biggest one is when it comes to restaurant service. In America, and I don't know if this is true for Canada, since I've never been to your wonderful country, when you have your food delivered to your table and you finish eating, even sometimes before you finish eating, they'll usually have the receipt and the like, be ready for you to pay and leave as fast as possible. that's pretty normal. And over in both the UK and in France, the service would kind of like stop after you finish eating, and then nothing would happen. And then like 10 minutes would go by, and your waiter would finally come back and be like, "So did you want any dessert?" And you'd be like, "Yeah, okay, sure." And then like they'd immediately bring you whatever that dessert item was. And then 10 minutes would go by, and then they'd be like, "Would you want coffee?" Because you can't have coffee and dessert. You have dessert and then coffee. And then you'd be like, "Okay, sure." And then you get that. And then, you know, now we're talking like maybe 30 minutes have gone by since you stopped eating your dinner, had your dessert and coffee, and then still nothing, just a void of emptiness as you're waiting for maybe somebody will anticipate that you want to leave at some point. even if you flag somebody down and you're like, "L'addition, s'il vous plaît." That doesn't always actually yield your bill in a timely manner, even if you are in a hurry, because there doesn't really seem to be any concept of, you know, like dashing off after dinner or anything, I guess. But it's very peculiar.
Yeah, I think we have a bit of a hybrid. It sounds much more like Europe than what happens in the States. So here, they'll just let you be at your leisurely pace and keep trying to upsell you into dessert and coffee and then booze. But they're usually prompt with a bill if you ask for one.
Yeah, it's the same experience. It was a little extreme when I said, like, it doesn't usually happen. But, if you are sort of accustomed to a faster pace where they're trying to, like, get in the next table, because it's not like that over there. Like, they have a seating at like 7, and they know their next seating isn't until like 9 or 9:30 or whatever, and so they don't really care about getting you out of there or anything. Like, it doesn't really matter to them, and that just can kind of go for a bit. Were there any major cultural differences when you went to Vancouver? Did they have special words for things that you weren't familiar with?
No, it's Canada. It was actually really interesting because it looks like California, but everyone is Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
So it was confusing. But I've never been out there before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, so that was you had told me before you left that that was the first time for you going to that coast at all.
No, going to that part of Canada.
That's what I mean, coast of Canada. Yeah. I know you've been to San Francisco and stuff before. And for some reason, Palm Springs or whatever. Or is it Palm Desert? Which desert did you go to?
The one where Coachella is.
Oh, why?
For Coachella.
That was the wrong answer. That was the wrong answer, Marco. I'm putting you in the judging folder right now.
So this was like 2006, and you could go and see Madonna and Tool at the same show.
Did you say Madonna again?
Madonna.
Okay, you just kind of said it a little Canadian-y, I guess, the first time.
Oh, was there like an aboot in
the
middle?
No, it was just sort of like Madonna, and I was just like, what? No, but I guess that's a reason. I don't go to concerts or anything, so yeah.
Oh, I like concerts. Coachella's not really my thing. It's too many people.
Oh, too many people outside in the dirt and mud and disgustingness
in the desert 4 hours from civilization where a bottle of water costs $8.
Yeah, which is another but you know, you got to get used to that because you have to go to Burning Man, Marco, because you are in that business, so you got to go there for networking.
There was an amazing tweet the other day that Dreamforce is now just like Burning Man, but people have clothes on.
Can you explain Dreamforce to me? Because I could read about it, but then my eyes roll back. So I don't understand what's going on with that. Like, is it an event and it's just been going on for like a month or something? All I see are like derisive tweets about it and things that Benioff has done.
Yeah. So you know Salesforce?
Yes, I'm familiar with obviously. The concept.
Yeah. So they host a major event called Dreamforce where all of their customers, partners, ISVs, people who want to sell to Salesforce customers all come out, and I think they get like hundreds of thousands of people out there for it, and it's just like a week of madness. They have a boat this year. I think they're calling it the Dream Boat. Yeah, and people spend like insane amounts of money on their booths, on their swag bags. It's nuts. We will likely have to go there at some point, but got out of it this year.
Okay. And I think Disrupt is starting or something right now. So you got out of that one too.
Yeah, that's the TechCrunch one.
I'm familiar with it because I watched the first season of Silicon Valley.
Right. That show is far too close to home.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Actually, I feel uncomfortable watching it because it's like awkward situations that actually happen.
Which character do you most identify with?
I've only seen the first four episodes, and then I couldn't watch anymore because it was making me cringe. So I'll let you know when I get a bit further along.
Okay. Well, spoiler alert for that thing that I said earlier then. I thought you would watch the whole thing.
it's fine.
Yeah.
Real life is a spoiler alert for the show.
Ding. But you had a good time when you went to your conference. On growth,
the thing? Yeah, it's called Grow.
Yes, yeah, but yeah, I mean, like, is it actually growth hacking? Like the, you know, like if you say growth hacking on Twitter, and then all those like jerks start faving it. It's not like that.
It's not like that. It's more, how do you build your company into sort of a scalable, sustainable model? So they had talks like Evernote and Cloudflare, their COOs would come out and talk about how did they scale operations from being a startup to these global empires. How do you sort? Stuart Butterfield did a talk on how you hire with still maintaining your corporate culture, and kind of how his biggest fear and thing that keeps him up at night is people, and how do they make sure they bring the right people on at the right time, and sort of the big stresses that come with, say, when you have to fire them. So actually really great in-depth talks.
Well, that's good. And then you had a talk, and you performed rather well, I think, according to, yeah, to my understanding of the rating system.
I did a on-stage pitch. Shopify held an event called Under the Radar as part of it, so they picked 8 startups to pitch. I came in first in our semifinals and second in the finals.
That is great.
The first prize won a mug and Slack socks.
Oh.
I totally wanted the Slack socks.
Well, I mean, who doesn't? I know that I want them, and Dan Sturm wants them too. We basically, everyone wants Slack socks.
They need to make Slack slacks.
I think that'd be a little loud for my pants to be wearing Slack slacks. It's a little aggressive for me.
Eh, we'll see what Matt says.
Would you wear a Slack shirt like Eddie Q? Or like Matthias?
Yeah, probably. I buttoned it up, but
oh, you wouldn't have everything like unbuttoned almost to your navel on both sides.
No.
Okay.
Would you?
I believe I would have everything buttoned except for the top button. If it was a button down shirt, if it was a polo, maybe the top or second button.
You're not going to pop your collar?
No, I don't pop collars.
Good man.
Mm-hmm. I only pop tarts. Anyway.
That's when we should have like a toaster sound.
Okay.
Like John Syracuse's toaster is now finished.
No, but you can't do that though.
Put a pop tart in a toaster?
No, but I mean, those are toaster ovens, not toasters.
Well, they still ding.
Yeah, that's true.
I guess they don't pop.
Well, once you pop, the fun don't stop. But that's something different entirely. Do you have Pringles? Well, they had Pringles in France.
Yeah, we have Pringles.
There was a...
they've got Pringles everywhere.
There's a sweet saffron or something. Or spicy saffron or spicy... Oh, it was sweet paprika is what it was. That's what it was. It was orange, okay. So I couldn't tell.
Yeah, I feel like saffron Pringles would be like the rose gold Pringles.
Yeah, well, I mean, I had saffron in a couple things when I was in France, but not the Pringles. That would have been probably a little expensive.
Just a wee bit.
Mm-hmm.
It'll go with your macarons.
Well, I did have a saffron macaron from Pierre Armé. But I have to say it was my least favorite, though, because they put too much saffron in it. You know when there's too much saffron in something and it has like a really, like, I don't know how to describe it, like almost astringent quality to it? I don't know. It packs a punch.
So how are you migrating from the French pastries to the terrible American pastries? Because I saw your almond croissant tweet.
Mm-hmm. I've been missing some of the French stuff. This morning I had that almond croissant, which I wouldn't ordinarily have ordered. I do like almond croissants, but this one seemed a bit excessive when it came to the Frangipan, which is, of course, the almond paste, for those unfamiliar with the technical term. But there was a lot of almond paste. And then this afternoon, I went over to Let Macaron in Beverly Hills, and I bought a 12-thing sleeve of macarons, and I'm going to split them with Jason later, because I miss having macarons, because we ate all the ones that we brought back from France, and they're gone forever, and there's no Pierre Armé in the U.S. or Canada.
It's true. It's very sad.
Yeah. Well, they have them.
Yeah, there's a bakery here that has them, but... Actually, I haven't been to get them.
Yeah, well, I highly recommend them if they're good. Well, I don't know anything about that bakery.
They're good. They have a good reputation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was that one I was telling you about that Pierre Armé has. That's Jardin du Peru, which is kind of a clunky name. But they had the, was it Lacoma or something plant, and it tastes like maple syrup. And it was kind of weird listening to somebody describe what it's supposed to taste like, and they said maple, and I was like, maybe that didn't translate right, because, like, I don't know why something from Peru would taste like maple, but it does. It really does taste like maple syrup, so it's interesting.
I can't vouch for this, and see, I'd be the perfect person to say, does it taste like maple?
Yeah. We should just have a show where we just fly you around the globe, and it's just like, does it taste like maple? And it's just, you know, you taste different things.
That'd be an amazing show for me.
Maybe
not,
or not
for anyone else.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would actually be a funny show for people who are secretly Canadian.
And also,
you'd be surprised.
A great way for you to shame people that buy pancake syrup instead of maple syrup. Are you familiar?
If you're listening to this and you buy pancake syrup, you should stop listening right now.
Why are
we,
you gonna
we
say,
don't want you.
Are you going to say something?
No.
So that was the extent of your punishment?
They're just not real. Yeah.
Okay.
No. Pancake syrup is awful.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. But, well, we'll save that for another day. Something interesting happened since we hadn't talked to each other for basically a month because of our... Well, let's just say... Both of our schedules did not align in such a way that it was possible for us to talk to one another in anything other than tweets.
We have our alternating travel schedule.
Yeah, we basically missed out on all of the really juicy Apple TV rumors leading up to the Apple event, and then we missed out on all the Apple TV analysis that's been going on for like the 2 weeks after the event, the week and a half after the event. And I've been dying to talk to you about it since our show is basically predicated on, well, just Apple TV, really. Like we just almost exclusively talk about that. I did a little discussion with Dan that I told you about, and I'm hoping that we won't repeat the same things that I necessarily have to talk to him about, but we have the advantage that you are a different person from Dan, so I'm sure you're going to have some different insights, and I think the conversation will go in a different direction.
New podcast, Dan or not?
It's pretty easy to tell, because Dan has pancake syrup.
Oh.
Yeah,
oh,
I was throwing him under the bus that whole previous segment. All right, so hi Dan.
So the Apple TV.
So the Apple TV. Leading up to the event, there were all those rumors and stuff, and the rumors basically sounded like exactly the same rumors that we had been hearing prior to WWDC and prior to the March event. That it was going to be a box and it was going to have a touch sensitive remote and that it wasn't going to have 4K and that it was going to have apps and that there would be a development SDK. All that stuff came to fruition. One thing I was kind of down on when we had talked about the rumors before and when I blogged about this before is gaming on the device, where I said, oh, you know, it's possible that they're not really that interested in gaming, that it's mostly going to be about the media companies. It does seem that they're heavily trying to push gaming in some way, casual gaming at the very least, in some way, more than I thought that they were probably going to lean on it. But given that they don't really seem to have a whole lot of new fancy tricks, I guess that makes sense. Although, it'll be interesting to see in practice how that shakes out, whether or not gaming will take off or whatever. But I don't want to hog the floor. What were your thoughts? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it kind of met my expectations of what it would be, because they have the app ecosystem. They're focusing on gaming, like you mentioned, and not really surprised about the lack of content. So I'm really excited about it. I'm totally gonna buy one. Super pumped about the gaming.
Are you gonna buy the 32 or the 64 gig?
Probably the 32. If I find I need the bigger one, then I'll just give it to my dad and buy a 64.
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking. I don't think they made a clear narrative case for why there is a distinction between these two tiers that they've introduced. Mm-hmm. So there's three models that'll be available to purchase. There's the Apple TV that I currently have, which spoiler alert, I'm not buying another one. And then there'll be the 32 gigabyte one, and then there'll be the 64 gigabyte one. Now, the 32 and the 64 are the same except for the storage size. So then it's just like, well, what real wind up being the case? I mean, I don't anticipate it being like a 16 gigabyte iPhone problem or something where it's just constantly full of stuff, because as we've seen from the news reports, there are all kinds of limits and a really extensive tiering system for how it downloads things in chunks by tags and will only keep a certain amount of stuff on disk at one time. Well, on disk, on chips inside of it at one time. And that it will just constantly be flushing and downloading new things all the time. That it's not just get the whole thing, put it on the device, fill up the whole device constantly kind of a thing.
Yeah, I think it's a streaming-centric device. So I don't really know what you need the storage for unless, like, console class games come out.
Yeah, I mean,
and I think that's a long shot, at least in this version, probably in the next one, but like, what are you going to store on it?
Yeah, exactly, because there's a 200 megabyte limit on the initial download, and then up to 2 gigabytes it can keep on the device at any one time, and the application when it's launched can demand up to that amount in downloads. How people wind up dividing up their games in order to accommodate that, I have no idea. In terms of streaming things, that basically means you can't have an entire movie on the device in HD, and you'd be pulling that down on the fly as well, which is interesting. So it there definitely isn't really like an offline case for this. You're not taking it to your cabin in the woods and watching your shows. It's not happening. Although you probably shouldn't watch Cabin in the Woods in your cabin in the woods. I think that would probably be unsettling a little bit.
I haven't seen that movie. Maybe that's where I should go watch it.
No, sure. go back to Whistler in a quiet little area and just go do that far away from humanity. I'm sure you'll totally not have nightmares or anything. Now, did you have any thoughts about the presentation of the device when it was initially talked about at the event? Like, did that mean anything to you? Because I know you're very focused on presentations, and when Dan and I had talked about it, we were both like, whatever. So I didn't know if that impacted you in any way, like anything Jenny said or anything that Eddie Q said about the device. Did any of it mean anything deep to you, or any of the demos mean anything deep to you?
Not really. I'm totally going to disappoint you with this. It was a really great demo. She was a fantastic presenter. The demos worked really well, and apparently everyone who actually got to use one said it worked as good in real life. So I think the way they told the story was really cohesive, and then everyone's been able to sort of leverage that after. That's what you're hearing on all the podcasts now.
Yeah, my only complaints about the presentation, and I went back and I watched it right before we recorded anyways, just to get it fresh, because I figured we'd probably discuss it, is the, I still don't like the parallax sliding around button stuff. I still think that's frivolous and weird. I still think it's a little strange how you switch the applications, that it's not smooth and seamless, that really wasn't a focus of it. The smoothest part of it is when you ask Siri to do it for you. And then the demonstrated applications, I thought were stronger when they were talking about content and when they were talking about games, and weaker when they were discussing some other tangential ideas that seemed to be percolating with Airbnb and Zillow. I was just like,
yeah. I see really cool use cases for that stuff. Like when you have friends over and you're planning to go on a trip together. Stuff like that, I think, is going to be awesome.
But I don't know. I'll have to see where that goes, but I'm not sure that's going to pan out like entirely as depicted. Because like when we're planning travel stuff, like all of the stuff for France, for example, we were watching TV together. And then Jason on his laptop was picking out all the stuff, and he would ask me questions like what I would want to do or what I wouldn't want to do. But I wouldn't want to sit there while he's browsing all of these sites and looking at travel itineraries, because that's the stuff that makes me have like anxiety issues. Cause I don't want to think about that. I don't want to think about that planning. But
once you have a couple options and you want to discuss them, like, especially if you're a group, maybe more than just a couple who's planning to go on the trip, and you want to talk through the options, putting it up on the TV is really cool. I don't know if it's a discovery thing so much as like a way to use it for discussions,
I suppose. But I'm surprised they didn't.
For us, I've been thinking about, we likely aren't going to build an iPhone app for a while, but for us, an Apple TV app would be really compelling, because every one of our clients has an Apple TV in their boardroom. So if they can just launch our app from there to run through analytics, that would be really cool.
Yeah. Well, one thing I was going to say was the one use case that I didn't see demonstrated, which I thought would be good, would be for meetings, like in an office environment. Everything seemed to be very focused on the home in the presentation. So in practice, I do anticipate there will be some office-y stuff, like whether that's working with some Bluetooth enabled webcam or something in order to like stream some video conferencing Skype calls or something, or whether that's going to be like a virtual whiteboard where you can connect with your iOS device and then scribble some stuff up from your iPad Pro up onto the big screen, or whether
maybe
that's
use your Apple Pen to circle all the things.
Yes, all the things, and then save off that stuff for later, like that kind of thing. I didn't see demoed, and I think that would probably have a stronger use case than like guilt. But there's the other case of like you're saying, an app specifically for the stuff that you're doing. I can't remember if it was Upgrade or whether this was Clockwise, but Jason Snell and, well, it was Dan Warren, so it was definitely Clockwise. They had talked about Panic has their dashboard, the control thing, you know, with all the graphs and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, that would, of course, be similar to what you're saying, like, for your app to be able to display that information up on a TV. And then everybody can walk by and see and check it all out. And it's there for their enjoyment.
Yeah, the enterprise use cases for this are awesome. Like, IBM's going to sell a ton of these for Apple. I bet Cisco is probably going to get in the mix there too, especially, like, as you mentioned, with like a Bluetooth camera.
Yeah, because they're not opening up that, what was it, USB something?
C?
I wasn't sure if it was C or whether they had done a mini A or something weird. Anyway, the port is not open for business.
There's your title.
There's a joke that I probably shouldn't have as the title, but so they would have to do it with like Bluetooth, and or like if it was its own device that was able to like mesh network over Wi-Fi or something. And I know that we had seen in some of the rumors that people were anticipating that there would be some kind of like FaceTime aspect to this. I didn't really see how that would work, because then you're getting back into the territory of the original iSight cameras where they clipped onto the top of your laptop. Remember those?
Yeah.
The cylinder ones. I don't.
I had one of those back when I had like the iMac that was like a lamp.
Oh, I didn't have that.
That was my first Mac.
Oh, that's nice. I worked for the school yearbook, and I was in the technology editor, and that basically meant nothing other than I'd help them with their like printing problems and stuff, and like Apple Talk setup. But I got to play with all the computers, and so what I really wanted, what I coveted, were the second generation iMacs that came in the Ruby and Sage and all of those ones. I wanted those because they were nice. I liked them a lot. Anyway, with our weird iMac discussion aside, we also got a glimpse at the fact that they're going to have these developer kits, and they've already started going out, and developers have been tweeting about things. If you move your remote, the new remote, it will wake up the Apple TV and it will turn on your TV.
Ooh.
Now I thought about that for a second. I was like, that's cool. And then I thought about it a little bit more and I was like, that's going to actually not be that great if I accidentally bump it on the coffee table and then it wakes up. But, we'll see in practice. Maybe it requires like human touch or something for it to, it's not just the fact that it's been moved. But you know, I don't know how much of that is accelerometer and how much of that is like capacitive sensing of being held,
or both.
Yeah. And
yeah, I'm glad to hear it turns on the TV. I was curious about that because I said it has the IR stuff, but there's no power button for the TV on it. And there's the weird TV button. That's the home button.
Well, it talks to your TV over, an HDMI standard called CEC. And so it can turn it on and it can change a couple things about the TV, but the important part is basically just turning it on. And the IR, from my understanding, controls the volume, and whether or not you're changing channels or doing any of that stuff doesn't matter because that's all Bluetooth 4, so you could be aiming it at the ceiling or whatever, which is sort of similar to Jason has a DirecTV remote for the DVR, they call the Genie, which is, I think that's a little bit presumptuous to think that it is a magic thing that grants wishes, but whatever. And so that remote is Bluetooth or wireless, I should say, because I don't know if it's actually Bluetooth. it doesn't require being pointed at any particular direction in order to do things, but it does require being pointed at the TV in order to turn it on or change the volume. So it is not CEC. It is all IR for that TV stuff and then all wireless for all of the other stuff. So the fact that it can turn it on without being pointed at the TV is good, but the volume thing's a little weird because then you might get used to pointing it away to do some things, but then needing to point it to do other things. Anyway, whatever.
I think it should be fine in practice.
Yeah, I have some other quibbles with the remote. Again, we get a rectangle. And again...
What's wrong with a rectangle?
Yeah, I have these things called human hands, and I really wish they would do something ergonomic. And I know that Johnny Ive seems to have forgotten what a compound curve is, but it is possible that he could maybe make something that fits in the human hand comfortably. Because it's not like it has a screen or anything. Like, it's a thing that you put in your hand that has no, like, requirements in terms of size or space. So I don't know why it needs to necessarily be an uncomfortable little matchbox shaped thing. But the other thing about it is the lack of buttons. And I know that there is a reason for that, which is that they like to keep things minimal. But I do think that when it comes to TV, I really want some more buttons, like physical buttons for doing things. I don't necessarily need the fast forward rewind stuff. That's all very intuitive, as she demonstrated it in the presentation. But I kind of wish that there were things like for going back to your previous app or something like that. Like when you're holding your cable remote and you hit back and then you go back to whatever channel it was that you were previously viewing. Like, there's nothing sort of like...
But doesn't, like, the home button do that? Because if you press the home button, it goes back, in today's version, goes back a screen, and if you long press it, it goes back home.
But it goes back a screen, like, menu-wise. It doesn't, like if you wanted to go to another application that you had previously been looking at a stream from... Like, okay, I'll get into the larger problem that I have with the metaphor of apps as channels, is that when you change channels, you're going in and out of an application, and this oftentimes several levels deep in and out, and so there is no, like, I'm just going to go see what else is on kind of a thing, and while many applications might have live streams that you can tune into, or have, like you know, the MLB app, for example, or the other sports apps, or I think the CBS app is also going to have live TV access like the CBS All Access app currently does on iOS, in which case there's nothing to, like, snap back and forth between these different things.
But they could maybe build in multitasking, like if you double tap the home button and it pops out your channels that you've recently been through.
Yeah, but okay, one thing I talked about Dan with that I think is missing, it would be nice to have, is if there was like a programming guide so that you could, with proactive and deep linking in iOS, which is part of tvOS, if the applications were able to register with the system that they had live streams and that they had programming that was, you know, this, from this time till this time, X show will be on. And the system knew that. And so then that way you could see in a programming guide kind of interface, like, oh, I want to go see this live right now, it's on. Or, oh, this live thing will be coming up soon, I want to go watch that. There's no real emphasis on anything like that. So it would be an interesting addition, I think, because I think that putting everything inside of the application makes all of the linear TV programming too opaque to the user, where they can't see necessarily what the advantage of the live stuff is. They just have to go poke around in different libraries. And if you know what you want to watch already, that is good, especially with the new system where Siri has universal search. You can very quickly find it where and what it is that you want to go watch when you know a general idea of what it is, but for like special events or something like that, like I'm not sure how that'll be surfaced, you know, for live events.
Yeah, I hear your point. I think a programming guide is maybe the wrong way to think about it, because programming in like a traditional TV sense is kind of dead in this model, and it's really just around live events. It's like sports and music and news.
Yeah, but they do have sports and music and news. And
yeah, I'm not saying I disagree with you. I'm just thinking it's not like a traditional programming guide where you're gonna be like, oh, Friends is on, I'm gonna put that on type thing. It's more you want to figure out how do you schedule and notify yourself of live events kind of thing.
Yeah, but there's no mechanism to schedule and notify yourself of live events without actually going inside of an application seeing what that application chooses to present to you in terms of what its upcoming programming is.
Is this something that could also be a third-party app, though? That like with deep linking between apps, if someone else can plug into these third-party systems, like say it's MLB and CBS and the New York Times, and whenever there's something live coming up, you can launch this app, see the programming note, and it can just push you into that third-party app?
I would say the reason why you couldn't do that with a third-party app is because then you could not do that. You couldn't do that as part of the system when you're watching something. And Siri wouldn't really be integrated with the programming guide inside of that application. You could switch to that application and see different things in a programming guide kind of interface. But that's not really quite the same thing. Like,
Yeah. I'm just arguing... like it's a 1.0. But if there's ways for people in the ecosystem to build these kinds of apps, then maybe that's going to push Apple to
Sherlock them.
Yeah, the name exists for a reason.
Yes. Well, I mean,
yeah, and the other side could be if they're actually working on an Apple Music like streaming service, which that's going to be very confusing for naming, if they call it Apple TV, but also with movies. It might be incorporated into something more like that, kind of like they did with Beats One.
Yeah, well, see, that's one of the... There's two different content rumors that are going around. There's the over-the-top, like, cable bundle, basically, where they gather a bunch of... Or, like, IPTV, if you're in Europe, or, like, satellite, or whatever. Like, whatever it is that you have, the thing that bundles all those channels and sells them to you at one price, that... OTT service from Apple is long been rumored and has been rumored as the source of many of the delays through this process. The other thing is Apple producing their own content, which is a different rumor. And that is about them getting into the game of making shows and making channels where they arrange things themselves. Is separate from the other thing, the OTT stuff. And we know that they're doing the OTT thing because Les Moonves, president of CBS, talked about it openly at All Things D conference, like it was totally going to happen. So I guess don't tell him your secrets, basically. But the with those two different things, like with the OTT service, now that they've gone this app route, I'm having a hard time imagining them having an app that has some of these services that will have their own separate apps outside of it. You know, like, let's say CBS was in the OTT thing, since, for example, Les Moonves said that they were in talks. So they wind up being inside of the OTT service. You would have an OTT app that has that as an available stream, and then you would also have the CBS Everywhere app as a separate thing. And that's sort of like your current system of you can watch CBS on TV or you can go to their app on iOS and then pick whatever it is you want to watch from their on-demand or whatever. So I don't think that necessarily makes the experience better. One thing I theorized with Dan that they might do, and I'm curious to hear what you might say on this, is maybe they'll have the bundle as something that people register into, and then all of the apps allow them access. So, for example, you open up the CBS app, and then it registers that you are a paying customer of the Apple OTT service. So rather than having an OTT app, it just knows that you're already paying for it through that mechanism and then lets you see and do whatever it is you want to do inside of the application.
Right.
And then that way you can also individually subscribe to things a la carte if you chose to, rather than participating in the bundle. And you're not having two competing systems where you have an OTT application that has a different separate user experience and then the third-party applications which have a different separate user experience. But I don't know if that's going to be the case. I'm just theorizing that that seems to make the most sense to me, is that it would be a subscription that doesn't have its own app. Maybe.
I think you're right in the, like, using your Apple ID as a login for those services in the over-the-top scenario. Because right now you have to log in with Comcast or Rogers or whoever it is, and it's super annoying. So if you can buy that bundle from Apple, and once your Apple TV is provisioned with your Apple ID, then it just logs you into all the things and you're good. I think the other rumor that's going around is that they're doing a streaming service for their iTunes catalogs, which I think is the more appealing one to me, because if that ends up being something that's another $10 a month and you can stream unlimited from Apple's service, I think that would be much, much more compelling than the over-the-top scenario.
We'll have to see how they both shake out, because I know that it is entirely possible that it might not be the entire library, just like Apple Music is not the entire iTunes music library.
It's a lot of it.
It is. So maybe it will wind up being a lot of it, but then you'll have all the special exceptions carved out, and so you can't watch Jurassic Park, or you can't watch Back to the Future, or you can't watch Star Wars or something. Could you imagine paying for a streaming service and then you can't watch Star Wars? I mean, that's basically what Netflix and Amazon's current situation is, but could you imagine Apple launching that? I don't know. And also, I'm curious to see what will happen with the other services that have something similar to that, like Netflix and like Amazon. Like, I don't know if they're necessarily going to go toe-to-toe with them. I have to imagine there is some kind of a twist, but we'll see. Who knows?
Yeah, I think Netflix is moving more and more towards the original content model. They're letting all their content deals expire, and I think that's okay. Like, there are so many Netflix originals now. Tons of really good stuff. So I think even if they lost all their back catalog of content, I would still subscribe because all the original stuff is really good.
Yeah, but it'll be different for every customer, because there will be some people who don't partake much of the originals, especially with Netflix's business model where you can come and go as you please. It doesn't require like a yearly subscription. So you can sign up for a month and then watch all of the House of Cards and then cancel your subscription. So I don't know how that's going to shake out. Yeah. One of the
I think that's a significantly painful exercise that enough people won't do it. Some people will, but I think most people will like buy their subscription and forget about it.
Yeah, well, and there's also the iTunes currently offers some of the programming that you can find on Netflix and Amazon. Like the first season of Transparent was just promoted today by the iTunes Twitter account, and that you can watch the first episode of the first season for free through iTunes. And I was just like, this is bizarre because it's entirely owned by Amazon. But it's interesting to see that set up. I know that I didn't look into it to see who, if there are other studios that they partnered with in order to make that, because I know that that's the case for like House of Cards, for example. So while Netflix has the rights to show it, but the DVD sales rights, I think, are actually like in a partnership with somebody else. And so that's why they sell DVDs and they have those available. It is a peculiar system. But it'll also be interesting to see if those things will still be available. And if so, if it's going to be weird that you can only watch like a season behind whatever the current season is. But, you know, it's the same way for HBO right now, that you can only watch like the last season of Game of Thrones before the current season of Game of Thrones, and that they won't release the one that's out there now until like a week before the next one. Thanks, HBO.
The last season's out.
The All Men Must Die season? I'm sorry, not All Men Must Die. The Dragony one? The last one?
Like season 5?
Yeah.
I bought that from Apple.
Oh, okay.
I watched it.
I thought that they were still like having their delay.
It was like 2 months or 3 months after because I think the season ended in April, or did it start in April?
It started in April, and then, well,
I'm double checking this right now.
Okay, I'm not sure, because I know that in the past they weren't releasing the previous season of Game of Thrones until like a week or two before the new season was about to start.
It didn't come out right after the season finale. I know it took like a month or two.
Okay, well, it's better than it was in the past, because I know for a fact that I had to do that for season 3 and 4. Let's move aside from this complete distraction.
We didn't talk about games, so you seem to think games won't necessarily be a huge thing.
No, well, okay, let me rephrase that. I don't know if Apple... my previous assumption had been that Apple didn't really view it as a priority, because they never seem to take games very seriously. They seem to enjoy the revenue from casual game sales, but they don't seem to necessarily have a deeper understanding of games than they've ever had in the past. From all of the awkward game demos that I've ever seen them have, where it's very clear that they might not actually be playing any of them. Like when Eddie Q in the presentation talked about the new Star Wars game, Disney Infinity. Disney Infinity is not a Star Wars game. Disney Infinity is like a platform, and then they added Star Wars to it recently. So anyway, like Eddie Q's not playing Disney Infinity, basically. I just don't know if they're really like super serious about it. They like it because they seem to know that other people like it, but it's sort of like if you were working at a restaurant and you hated making falafel and it was just like the biggest pain in the butt and you don't know why anyone would eat it, but it's all your customers wanted. You'd be like, okay, I guess I'm going to make some falafel. But it doesn't really like change your feelings about it or make you understand falafel anymore. So I don't know if
I don't know if I agree with that though, because Apple doesn't need to get games to make a good platform for game developers. They have to make a good development platform, and putting in like the right APIs and stuff like Metal certainly help. And it's up to Apple's not making games. So as long as third parties are there making great games, and you can see it with the iPhone, like I have probably 4 pages of games downloaded onto my iPhone because it's the primary way I play them now.
Yeah.
And there's tons of really, really good stuff there. And for that, I always want to play it on my TV, but with AirPlay mirroring, it's delayed and the controls suck and it's horrible. And to be able to play any one of those games on the Apple TV, I would be so happy.
Yeah, but that's...
And they're not, like, casual games. Some of them, like the Lara Croft Go one that just came out, that takes a couple hours to play. It's a simple control scheme, but it's a really great puzzler. It's very well produced. It's made by Square Enix. Really well done stuff. There's a ton of, like, full-out RPGs that, with a tactile controller, would be 10 times better. So
yeah, but that's what I'm getting at when I'm saying they seem to understand that people want them and that they're making the APIs and that they know that developers want it, but they don't seem to understand like games deeply, in that the controlling mechanism for this is again that weird rectangle with a touch interface that you're not looking at, and a limited set of buttons that you can't really do anything with, and that if you want to use a game controller from a third party, you can, and it's entirely optional, and it's an additional purchase, and that developers cannot require that you use it. So they have to support the remote for the lowest common denominator across the board for everything, which is...
I think that's a rule that's going to change really quickly.
Well, it did change because they initially released the documentation that said that you could require the game controller, and then they released the documentation revision that said that you were not allowed to require the game controller.
Yeah, but when you get a couple companies building stuff and saying, look, we made this awesome thing and we could push it out and do, like, we want to bring say, like something like Uncharted from the PS4 over to the Apple TV, because it could probably render it to very similar quality. And we need to bring a real control to support that. Apple would probably let them do that because it brings a big enough market and brings enough sort of credibility to the platform as something for serious games. If the only holdback is a controller, and the standard MFI controller is very similar to what you would get for the Xbox. So I think, like, reading into the tea leaves of what Apple did and didn't do before its launch, before anyone's actually built anything for the platform, we've seen them open stuff up before and be less restrictive, and I think that's probably what'll happen here.
I'm skeptical that they will allow people to enforce a controller requirement since they don't make an Apple controller. I think the day we see them make an Apple controller is the day that will allow them, the day that we'll see them allow enforcing it as a requirement.
That's the day Syracuse has a 6-hour podcast.
Yeah, about how terribly designed it is and uncomfortable it is to hold. Like, I don't think Johnny Ive is capable of making a game controller that will be remotely comfortable. Get it? Remotely comfortable. But the other thing about this with the game controller is that the other thing about this with the big games, like you said, Uncharted. Like, I really like the Mass Effect games. And I really like Mass Effect 2. I think that is an amazing game to play. It is on 3 DVDs. It requires disc switching. It is huge. It still requires, even if you download everything to your hard drive on your Xbox 360 or, you know, your Xbox One or whatever you have, it still requires a lot of space, and you're not allowed to do that with the Apple TV. So that is a huge limitation for these developers to work around. Now, it's not a huge limitation for something like Crossy Road. That's a little easier for them to do. But for something as expansive as like Uncharted or as expansive as like Mass Effect series kind of stuff that requires huge texture maps and geometry, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's just, I just don't know how they're going to do that unless they also change the software download space requirements. Or maybe they'll just be like, you can only play this game if your download speed, if your connection is X fast or something like that. Or maybe they'll have like flexible caching where they'll be like, you can download more levels if you're on a slower connection or something like that. But it will require more room, in which case people might see more of a reason to own the one with larger space. But I don't know. I have no idea. It just seems like they're beset from all sides in ways that they're not going to go toe to toe for the big stuff. And I still don't think that's really their big goal, because I don't think they've ever really had that in their sights as like a big goal. I think that they know that people want to play some games and they make concessions for them to be able to do those things. But it doesn't seem like it is something where they are going to put a dramatic emphasis on it.
I disagree with that. I think stuff with a policy, I'm not betting on anything with that until some stuff gets out in the wild. Like, look at the iPhone that launched without an app store altogether, and then things were very severely limited, and it opened up over time. I think they're being really conservative with the storage stuff. I think that's going to change. They obviously released a 64 gigabyte version for a reason. Like, with those limitations, neither of us can think of anything that you would store on the device at any time where you can't like purge out the assets and re-download them within that. Because if you have a 2 gig limit of downloaded content plus 200 megs for your apps, why do you even need 32 gigs? None of it really makes sense. So I think they're just going to wait and see what developers do. And I think that's also really exciting because everybody's going to be pushing the limits of it. And I think a lot of really great game developers are going to want to work for it. From what I've heard, developing for consoles is like really, really horrendous because you're relying on people like Sony or Nintendo to put together development toolkits for you, where Apple already has sort of really great libraries in place that everybody's been using, and you can use the same rendering engines that you might have been using for your console game.
Yeah.
I think arguing based on Apple's current policy that this won't happen or they're not suited for it is looking at just the snapshot in time. And if we take their current policy, which we've already seen is kind of shifting, and say, well, what would it look like if it wasn't there? There's huge opportunity for them to take over the whole console market.
Mm.
Whether they mean to or not.
Okay. I'm erring more on the side of what they are saying and doing right now. Since I haven't seen any sort of like rumor come out that it'll be like, oh, in 6 months they're gonna see how it all goes, and then they're gonna like open up all the things, and it's just like, if I saw something like that, then maybe sure, but I'd be more in line with what you're thinking. But right now, I'm very conservative about what I see them doing in this space. I see them having a streaming media device that can play some games. I don't see them having a gaming platform that can stream some movies. So that's basically my distinction that I'm drawing here.
I see them as they're building an app platform, and it does streaming, it does Airbnb, and it does games, just like the iPhone. And so I don't think it's about media anymore. Like, media's part of it, because that's traditionally what we know TVs to be. But I don't think that's what TVs are going to be in 3 years, because once you can natively run and build these different apps on it, it's going to change how everything works. Like, there's going to be real-time chat apps built for watching TV with your friends. That's definitely going to happen. They're going to put out Periscope for the TV.
Okay.
So I think...
You're talking about like something far in the future that probably will exist after this model has been retired, and there will be other models that come out. That's really not what I'm getting at. I'm only talking about what they're releasing for like the next 12 months. Like that chunk of time, because they announced it at the event, and I'm sure in the future it's going to do much more. And it is entirely possible that it will do every single thing that you just said. So I'm not arguing against the possibility of it. You are entirely correct that it is possible. I just think that on the timetable of like the next 12 months, I don't see them taking over the console market with the device.
Not in 12 months.
No.
My only other argument for the controller would be, if you know it's supported by a ton of games and all the games have really, really terrible touch controls for the remote, and you care about games, you're going to go buy a controller. Like, I wouldn't buy a controller for my phone, but I would for my TV.
Yeah.
Because how do you even then hold the phone? It's weird. But it feels natural for a TV.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say my counter argument to that is that they've had for those controllers, there's two different controller types. There's the one that's like an Xbox 360 controller, which is the one that we're mainly talking about. But there was another one that they have, which you can buy, which is the kind that is basically like a big case for your iPhone that has the buttons on either side. And both of those are technically supported on iOS. And you can go through all kinds of contortions to make that happen if you are really serious about gaming. But it doesn't really seem to have impacted the market in any significant or meaningful way, because it's not really a requirement.
But I think it's also just awkward. Like, mm-hmm. if you have this giant thing that makes your tiny phone like five times as big, then you might as well be playing with the Wii U controller, and it has better games because it's made for that. And then if you're getting the wireless one that looks like the Xbox controller, where do you put your phone or your iPad? How do you prop it up? None of it makes sense, which is why I think it hasn't taken off, because the ergonomics of it are stupid.
Yep. Well,
yeah.
I mean, there's that.
Yeah, so it's just like, I'm arguing their argument.
Okay. Well, we'll just see about that now, won't we, Marco? But the other, I guess, final thing, since we've hit a dead end with this. game over, man. Game over. The other little thing is that the Fire TV was announced this week. A new generation of it, I should say. And it undercuts the Apple TV in price. It seems to have applications and games. It has a special gaming model, which also comes with a controller. Which costs as much as the 32 gigabyte. It has streaming 4K video. It has high definition high dynamic range video, HDR, which is the stuff where they have really bright brights and really dark darks. They have all kinds of little goodies that they've thrown in. They have Alexa on it instead of Siri. And they have Amazon X-Ray instead of the service where Apple lets you scrub through very quickly in order to try and find Edward Norton. You can use that Amazon X-Ray to see where Edward Norton is. So there is that. I'm curious to see how that will shake out, and I honestly am kind of interested in I'm sort of on the fence of being able to justify buying both devices and like trying to see what the difference between the two is.
You should totally get one just for the discussion.
Yes, I'm just going to drop $250 just to talk about these on a podcast. That makes no money for me. I really am genuinely curious. And this is the only time that I've really been like interested in an Amazon device, like on the fence about Kindles in the past or whatever. And they have the like $49 ridiculous entry level Amazon Fire tablet that you can get. And you can get it in a 6-pack where you get buy 5 and get 1 free, and they all come in these little cardboard envelopes. It's ridiculous. But, you know, I think those are mainly going to be for like education, point of sale service kind of things, or like museum guides or whatever. But which is another weird thing. I can't remember what museum it was. We were walking around somewhere in Europe, and they had distributed. Oh, it was the Louvre, and they had distributed Nintendo DSs. Where you could plug in headphones and use the Nintendo DS as your museum guide. So that is a possibility for Amazon $49 tablets. But the thing is, I'm genuinely curious to see how it'll shake out, especially since Amazon also has their own video platform where they make their own video content. And up until today, still, Amazon does not offer a application for the Apple TV. Now, whether or not that was because they were previously not invited or didn't want to be on the Apple TV before, when it had the exclusive, you know, like you're in or you're out based on whatever we feel like kind of a thing, whether that is only the reason why they didn't do it before, whether now that there's an SDK, whether they'll be on the platform, who knows? But it'll be interesting to see if they try to use their library of the few shows that they have, because they even have fewer than Netflix in terms of original content. They try to use those as leverage for trying to sell their device, and also mentioning that it's $50 cheaper than the Apple device. I'm curious. I'm just curious. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I think an Amazon app is going to come for sure. If it doesn't, that'll be, I think, the more interesting thing. But I think they'd be foolish not to make one, and there doesn't seem to be any reason why Apple would stop them from doing so. And then to your point about the new Fire TV, everything you listed was all just specs, and I think that's going a bit to Amazon understanding their market a bit more of how they differentiate from Apple, because Apple's coming in from user experience, sort of delightful, useful things that you'll pay a bit more money for. And Amazon's looking to come in at the more technical side, where you can say, well, yeah, but it doesn't have 4K. And they're giving you sort of purchase rationale in the specs. And it's a bit dubious at best, because who even has a 4K TV? And if you have a 4K TV, do you really care that the little adapter is $49 or $149. So I think it's really interesting from a marketing point of view. I'm wondering what it's going to be like to actually use it.
Yeah, well, I mean, as I've discussed on several soapboxes in the past, I'm skeptical of 4K as UHD as anything other than a marketing buzzword. But the fact that they have a marketing buzzword to levy here in this case that Apple cannot levy, that interests me, especially since Apple introduced a phone that shoots 4K video that won't play back at 4K on their device.
But what's the market penetration for 4K TVs?
Oh, it's ridiculously small. I think there are probably more 3D TVs in the world right now than there are 4K TVs. Yeah.
So I think.
But Matt Alexander has one.
It's one of those
one.
Things that's. Well, of course he does. He drinks Soylent.
Oh.
Apparently the new one tastes like Cheerios.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a guy at work that drinks it every day.
Ew.
He has the new ones in the bottle.
Ew.
No.
I don't know. Definitely not. No.
Anyway, I think it makes sense for who Apple sells to and kind of the way they build stuff out over time to go with 1080. It would be a waste of resources to have 4K support within it because they probably need to upgrade a ton of chipsets for that. Like even just like the HDMI controller is probably completely different.
I'm not sure. I think I recall reading somewhere that supposedly, according to someone's armchair engineering, the device is theoretically capable of playing back 4K. Like you're saying, I don't know if that means like necessarily every single chipset, like the HDMI controller, et cetera, can like actually do it. But the someone's armchair engineering said that it was possible.
Yeah, but even gaming performance, if like...
Oh, you couldn't game in 4K. Yeah, forget it.
Yeah. So that's something that would have to get worked out. Plus, no one has the TVs for it anyway.
Yeah, well, but like we're saying, we both agree that it is a marketing buzzword and that it will perhaps play into the purchase decision of somebody. And like, you know, maybe somebody will be like, oh, well, I might be buying a new TV soon, so maybe I should get the one that can come with 4K and maybe I'll use it later. And Amazon's library of 4K video is mainly their own original content, as well as Netflix's content, which also plays back on the Fire TV, in addition to YouTube. That is the breadth of it right now. And that is really a pittance when it comes to a library of content that's available to you in that format. There really is not a large marketplace for this right now. The TVs aren't out there in wide numbers. The ability to play them back just isn't there. But also, the catalog of these things is microscopic in comparison with all other forms of entertainment that are produced and playable on the media devices. So it might be a situation like HD where over time we see this start to trickle up more until eventually it just wins over and predominantly everything is HD rather than being standard def. But that's going to be many years from now. So Apple doesn't need to move on that. It's just interesting that there is this other device that is competing on these sort of similar terms. And whether you're a price-conscious consumer who is interested in getting something that's $50 less, or whether you are somebody who is very interested in the highest of the high-end specs, then, you know, we'll see.
Yeah. I don't know much to add to that.
Yeah. Just mainly a shrug.
Yeah.
Podcast shrug.
I literally shrugged.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to describe it for the listeners. Your shoulders went up, or did you lower your head and raise your shoulders?
Shoulders went up, I lowered my head inside, and then shoulders went down, and I slumped.
Well, the slump's important. That adds character to the whole thing.
It's slightly in defeat.
Okay.
Yeah. If you take the two emojis, so you have the woman with her shoulders up, and then you put her with the slump, and you put like the shoulders up, and then the slump, and then the shoulders up again. That's an emoji shrug.
Oh, I just use the little Unicode thing. The arms up and the like little smiley grin. You know that one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, you send me that all the time.
I greatly enjoy it. I have it as a keyboard shortcut. And then so for some reason iOS deleted my keyboard shortcut. I was very cross with iOS for that, because it took a lot of time to copy and paste that and type in I shrug as my keyboard shortcut for it. But it's there now, and that's all that matters. We're reunited, and it feels so good. I think that rounds out everything we have in terms of travel and in terms of Apple TV. Is there some unexplored avenue that we could perhaps go down in terms of, like, I don't know, something horribly catastrophic that happened this week in terms of advertising and journalism?
Ugh. Oh, geez, that's a long topic, and we're an hour 20 minutes.
Yeah, in. I but we're not going to do that. No, it's just
yeah. That's a rabbit hole for maybe next time.
Mm-hmm.
By then, I'll have my blog post done.
Oh, by then, no one will care, because I'm sure this tempest in a teapot.
Oh no, this is going to just keep exploding for another couple weeks.
I just have to imagine that at some point we'll get to that like level where no one cares about the stories about it as much as the journalists care about writing them, and then
no. Because like it's going to be, you have something that has to do with Apple, where Apple is theoretically perceived as the bad guy.
Yeah, well, they're stealing everything from everybody, according to some people.
Yeah,
dear.
I don't even know how to talk about this without getting angry.
Yeah, well, I probably that for the best. I think I can summarize my opinion until next time, that I think it is a complex and nuanced issue that really does not merit most of the horrible absolutist dead end end times kind of discussion that I see circulating about it, and that I don't really see these massive conspiracies, and that maybe people can just cool it.
Yeah, I think the people are missing the broader issue that web advertising has to change as a whole. And looking back at how advertising used to run for publications, they all had in-house sales teams. Modern digital publications like Quartz or Condé Nast all do. Some of them, like Condé Nast, also use the terrible ad networks, because as a publisher, you don't have to think. You just drop in some code and you have money. And that's not how publishing worked 20 years ago, but it is how it works today. So I think people need to rethink the model, and eventually they'll get over this hiccup. It's just like when pop-up blockers were huge, everyone thought the web was doomed. This is the same thing. People hate display ads. They're invasive. They're going to die. The tracking is not going to die. They will always find a way. If web blockers become more prominent, everything's just going to move server-side. They'll just compile the whole page with Node and deliver it to you fully rendered, so your blocker can't even see what third-party code is from first-party code. So there's these weird like technical issues that are going to change, and business model things have to change, and we really have to decide, do we want a web where people have really awesome ads that are relevant to the content, like what happened with the podcast industry, what John Gruber does, what Federico Vitici does, that are really effective ads that are listed as ads? Or do we want really insidious things like the sponsorship going on inside of Vine, like some of the weird native content that we've seen in The Atlantic, where we don't even know that it's advertising? And those are kind of the futures we're going towards, and that's my rant.
I'm just gonna say yep. And then we'll circle back to this whenever, I don't know, in 5 months, whenever we record our next episode.
Yeah, probably a month from now, because I'm going to San Francisco.
Yeah. Well, that'll be nice. I mean, you'll be in the same state. I'll wave in your general direction, but I don't think I will be able to make it up to say hello to you.
Yeah, I am gonna try to see Jason. So that'll be nice.
That'll be nice. Say hello for me, and then give him a wave. Don't touch him though. Don't say that, don't hug him, and then say Joe wanted me to hug you, because I don't want that. No personal contact.
Oh, I'm totally gonna do that.
No, just wave. Only wave. Do like the Queen's wave.
that would have to be coming from Mike.
Okay. Well, I mean, you are in a way a citizen.
It's true. We are part of the empire.
Yeah.
She is our head of state.
Mm-hmm. I went to her palace.
So did I.
I mean, I didn't go in it. We went in the gift shop for her palace.
Everything there is so expensive.
It is incredibly expensive. There was, but yeah.
We're in like the little tea sets, like the fancy ones in the glass, like in the back left. So beautiful.
I thought that was all like hideous old lady stuff, but if you like it, that's fine.
No, they were like the really modern ones.
Oh, I must have glossed over it.
Like there's like the $600 to $20,000 section.
All I knew is it was like, I don't know, 85 degrees inside of the shop. So it was incredibly uncomfortable to be in there. For some reason, England is very cold, and then they keep all of the interiors of places incredibly boiling hot. And I don't know why they do that. It's just like, can things just be like room temperature? It'd be nice. But the...
It's because it's in Celsius.
Yes, they miscalibrated. Every single room is just set to be 85 in Fahrenheit, but it's actually Celsius. But anyway, so that was for another time. The ads and the Apple TV. I'm sure we'll talk about more when they actually ship the things and all.
Yeah,
all
hopefully
of that
by the
stuff.
Next one we'll have them.
Yeah.
Do you know when do they ship? Other than October,
all they said was October. They didn't even give like beginning or end of. There's no indication, and they don't say when sales will be open. Which I also thought was curious, because like with devices like the iPhone, the pre-order sales are already known and they are ready to go, and you know October is not too terribly far away from right now. And nor was it very far away from when they actually gave the presentation. So it's curious. I don't know if that means like all of a sudden, like the last Wednesday of September, last Tuesday or Wednesday of September, it'll be like on Apple Store, all of a sudden you can pre-order it, or whether all of a sudden it'll just start showing up in stores in October and you can go buy them. I think that would be very strange, because usually they do let you pre-order things these days. But We'll find out.
Yeah. Early 2015. Oh, you know what we didn't talk about? How I wrecked my laptop.
Oh. I forgot about that, because
That was like a month ago.
Yeah, that was in ye old ancient times.
Yeah.
Would you like to run through it?
Sure. So I just got back from BC and was super tired and was writing emails on my couch. Closed my MacBook Pro, put it on the couch. It was upside down, so screen facing down, hinge facing out. And I had a big bottle of water on my coffee table. And I was playing Wii and was vigorously flinging the remote. Knocked my water bottle over, which was completely full, which then tilted backwards to pour directly into the vent holes of the MacBook Pro that was on my couch. And then I poured the water back out and made the mistake of opening it. And then I thought it was dead. So I went to the store the next day and bought a new one because I had to work. And then that night, my MacBook came back to life. And so I'm speaking to you from it now.
Did you return the other one?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I guess I never asked you about that.
Yeah, I actually just returned it this week. We were going to keep it, but then decided it made more sense to return it.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, I've been through every single Apple device this year, I think.
Well, it'll be nice when you get the Apple TV, because they're charging extra for the wrist strap for the remote. So,
yep.
Hopefully you'll throw it somewhere and break something. And then we can talk about that.
No doubt. So my old Apple TV that my dad has stopped working as well.
That's the second gen?
720p version.
Yeah, the second gen. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then my iPad's broken from a previous incident. So literally every Apple device has been broken this year.
And do you want to talk about another device in your home?
Oh, Jesus. So I was in Toronto, meeting with investors, and then my watch starts going off like crazy because Nest is telling me that there's an emergency and there's smoke in my kitchen. And so I kind of have to pause the meeting, call my dad, and say, "Hey, can you go check if my house is on fire?" And so he goes and he looks and he calls me and he's like, "Nope, nothing going on." So I check the Nest app and it's like, "All clear, everything's good." And then another 20 minutes later, it goes off again, this time in a different meeting. And I had no idea what was going on. So I'm like tweeting with Nest support. They're like trying to get my dad to phone them. And I think this is an issue I ran into before where if you have the hardwired Nest Protect, dust can get in through the top and then it will just randomly start triggering the alarm. So that was fun.
Wow.
Yeah.
I.
Like, what do you do when you're in another city, an hour drive away in good traffic, 3 hours in bad traffic, and the thing says your house is on fire? Like, do you call 911? Do you call your neighbor? Do you call who? What do you do?
No, well, man, they gotta do something about that because that is, you can't leave that situation as it is because you can't trust the device to tell you whether or not there is a fire. In which case, you'll either start ignoring it because it's all false positives, or you will take every single one of them seriously because they could actually happen. Neither one of those cases is satisfactory because then you could actually have a fire if you ignore them. And you could also wind up in a situation where you're sending your dad over every 5 minutes to go check on this nest. So I hope that you can resolve that with them because that is some BS.
So when they replaced this one, they said if it happens again, I can choose to get a full refund instead of getting another replacement. So I might opt for that and just go back to an old school smoke detector,
Yeah.
which will suck because this is literally outside my kitchen and I got the Nest because you could wave at it and then they took that feature away, which also sucks because there were too many false positives. So when people's houses were on fire, they were like running around screaming and they would silence the alarm.
Ugh.
I don't think that ever happened, but it was proved that it could happen.
I've never set off the smoke detector inside of my apartment.
Does it work?
It does. I test it and it has the little LED going and stuff, so it's fine. And my house has not burned down. My apartment has not burned down. So I take that as a strong indicator that it is working. But the
Is it near your kitchen? And do you cook bacon?
it is in my bedroom, and there's one in the hallway next to the bedroom where the door can't shut, so that way it's near the kitchen, but it is not in the kitchen. But neither one of them is in the kitchen.
My main floor is like one big room because I knocked out all the walls. And so, more or less, the main floor is the kitchen. So, anytime I cook anything or like broil something, it goes off.
Oh.
Yeah. And I have a 10-foot ceiling. So, I always have to like get a broom or jump on a bench. I hate it.
Have you considered putting it in, like, a stairwell or something?
It's hardwired.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
I mean, I could get the battery one and then cap it, but then
Yeah, that's ugly.
it's connected to the one upstairs. The one upstairs is just a normal one.
Well, they have those quote unquote normal ones where they have like little remotes and stuff now. So you
Oh, I would lose that.
well, you just glue it to your refrigerator at such an angle that it will always operate only that smoke detector.
Yeah.
But now then you won't lose it. Then you'll break your refrigerator and then you'll lose it. But
That would make me so sad.
speaking
I
of
like
broken
my fridge.
refrigerators, no, but
Oh, yeah.
I got a replacement for my replacement broken refrigerator and
Is the new one nice?
okay, so listeners, when I came back from France, first thing I noticed was that nothing in my refrigerator was cold, and then I opened up the freezer. And nothing on the top was cold, but there was a giant block of ice on the bottom. and I don't know what happened. And then I started piecing together what must have happened in that the whatever fan compressor component in there or whatever doesn't seem to really be working. Whatever is on the bottom floor of it was freezing into a giant block, but everything else inside of the area was completely room temperature. It made no sense. I was angry because that was just one more thing to deal with, and contacted my a very old landlord and made arrangements for that to be replaced. I don't think that old landlord saw it, because the replacement device came and it was beat up on every single edge and corner and scraped, and the inside was all busted, and it was a mess, and you could hear it from my bedroom, like the sound that thing was making was just awful. So they replaced it again, and it's not for the first time today, and the new one is better. It is quiet.
Is it clean?
Clean. It is not dented on every single surface. It is new to me still, and not new, which is a little frustrating, but I can cope with that. It's not like I live in the lap of luxury here in Beverly Hills. And then the other weird thing about it is that the new refrigerator opens on the other side now. And so it's taking some getting used to, because there is a pocket door you walk through to get into the kitchen. And so it opens on the side that faces the little part of the wall from the pocket door and not on the side facing into the kitchen.
Can you rehinge it?
You can rehinge it. I see all the screws where that is possible. I don't know if I want to rehinge it. I might just leave it like that forever and then just try to get out of this apartment.
it should only take about 20 minutes.
If you say so. Last thing I need is to break a refrigerator right now.
I'll send you a YouTube video.
Okay. I think that pretty much covers all of our shenanigans, our the things that have broken in our life shenanigans.
Yes, I think so.
So let's shut the refrigerator door on this conversation and end it without alarm.